We are making, good morning, this morning we will begin a strategic adjustment, which is that what I would like to do, Bli Neder, henceforth, pretty much, is try to do two prakim each time we get together. The prakim are short, and since a lot of them are expressions of similar, some of them are expressions of similar themes, I feel that we might be losing a little bit of momentum. I'm not sure if that's true. What do you guys think?
Invisible man.
What?
You're speechless.
So today we're going to set for our agenda Perek Mem Aleph and Perek Mem Beis. Okay, Perek Mem Aleph is, and they are really, truly short prakim. Perek Mem Aleph deals with a Gemara which is great. It's just like it's a Gemara. I mean, every Gemara is great, but this Gemara is like great material for somebody who wants to be a cynic. Why? Because this is a Gemara in Perek Chelek, where the Gemara says, okay, so tell me, what's the name of Mashiach? What's the name of Mashiach? Tell me, what Mashiach, what are we supposed to call Mashiach? Okay, so this Gemara is basically the equivalent of the following. Okay, imagine that there was a meeting of the Rabbinical Council of Baltimore, and they were having a discussion, they were sitting and learning, and saying, so what's the name of Mashiach? And one of them, I don't want to say who, said, oh, his name is Hopfer. And another one, I don't want to say who, said, his name is Heinemann. And another one said, his name is Wahlberg. And another one said, his name is, I don't know, whatever, Neuberger, right? Right, so you would say, I have this room full of people, right? And they all have messianic aspirations, right? Each one says, oh, Mashiach.
Me.
You know, that's me. So essentially, it almost sounds like we have that in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Why? Because listen to the Gemara. Says the Gemara, Mashemai, what's the name of Mashiach? Debei Rabbi Shila Amri, in the house of study of Rabbi Shila, they said, Shilo Shemo. His name is Shilo. As it says, Ad Ki Yavo Shilo. He brought a verse. He didn't just make it up. I mean, there's no pasuk which says Ad Ki Yavo Heinemann. Right? But there is a pasuk which says Ad Ki Yavo Shilo, which is very close to his name. Shilo, he spelled it with an aleph. He spelled it with a hey.
What's
a look? Debei Rav Yanai Amri, Yinon Shemo. As it says, Yishemo Lo'olam, Lifnei Shemesh, Yinon Shemo. Wow. Yana, you know. Debei Rav Chanina Amar, Chanina Shemo, you guessed it. As it says, Ashilo Etein Lachem, Chanina. The Yeshayim, some say his name is Menachem ben Chizkiya. As it says, Kirochach Mimeni Menachem Eshiv Nafshi. It's distant from me, the Menachem, the consoler that would restore my soul. And the Rabbanan say, Chivra Debei Rabbi Shemai. He's called the White One, which basically means the leper of Beis Rabbi. As it says, Achein Choloyenu Hunasa. He bears our illness, umachevenu sivlam, and our aches he carries. Right? This is a verse which was really, really taken up, so to speak, religiously by the Christians. V'anachnu chashavnu anagua mukeh elohim umuna. We saw him as plagued, as smitten by God, and suffering. Okay. So what's pshat in this Gemara? What on earth is going on over here that each one is saying the name of Mashiach is his name? Were they really pretenders to the throne, right? And was the one who said that his name was Menachem the first recorded Lubavitcher, right? You know, like what's going on over here that the Gemara is saying these are the names of Mashiach? So the Maral explains it beautifully, beautiful pshat. He says like this. You know that when we learn in our thinking about the personalities that we have, we learn about Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov and Moshe and Aaron and Yosef. We learn about all these things. So with each one of them, what do? We ascribe and perceive in each one of them a midah, a characteristic. Right? Avram Avinu is Chesed and Yitzchak is Gevura and Yaakov is Emes. Whatever it is, whatever the specific characteristics are, but each one has a midah, has a characteristic which is part of the big picture, right? But each one has its own piece, component, which they add to that picture. Mashiach is conclusion. And as conclusion, it's really bringing everything together. In that sphere, in that realm, in that number of midos, we call Mashiach, right? David is the midah of malchus of kingdom, which isn't really just one midah amongst midos. Malchus is the seventh, which is the concluding, the bringing together, is everything together, right? 6 days, counting, leading to Shabbos, comes Shabbos, and Shabbos is kalila debate, right? As the language, vayichulu, everything comes together. In fact, perhaps sometimes, Shabbos doesn't even add anything, because you don't build, and you don't manufacture, and you don't create on Shabbos. But what do you do on Shabbos? You coalesce. You bring together everything which is there before. So Mashiach contains in it, not particulars, but everything. And therefore, to some degree, everybody finds something in it. Everybody's going to find something in it, because if Mashiach is supposed to be that which brings everything together, so then it's going to have in it a little bit for everybody. Now, how do we generally perceive things? You know that Avram Avinu had a very important theological discovery. What was that? He discovered HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He believed in the one God, right? Everybody forgot about the one God. They thought they were worshipping the sun and the moon and the stars, all the other things that were in between. Yes, that's a big part of Avram Avinu's discovery. But there's a very specific path to Avram Avinu's discovery. And there's a very specific element in Avram Avinu's discovery which is beyond believing in the God, the one God. And that is that Avram Avinu said, as we have in the Tehillim, in the Psalm, which is attributed to Avram Avinu, Eson HaEzrachi, he discovered, Ki Amarti Olam Chesed Yiboneh, that Hashem built the world as an act of giving, as an act of kindness. And we say it every time we stand up to Daven Shemoneh Esrei, in the bracha, which is Avram Avinu's bracha, Magen Avraham, what do we say? Gomel chasadim tovim v'konei akol. Hashem grants good kindness, and He owns everything. His taking ownership of everything is through creation. His creation was the ultimate gemilus chasadim. Ki omarti olam chesed yibaneh. Now, of course, you understand, once you discover that Hashem is a God of kindness, so you understand that Hashem is a God who is directly concerned and involved, because a person who's not kind, who's just going to be systematic, so then he may not be involved in everything in the world. He may delegate and say, okay, look, you take care of this, you take care of this. But part of the chesed of Hashem is the directness of Hashem's relationship down here, cutting through the sun and moon and stars and all the other barriers which might exist. Right? Come straight to the source. Avram Avinu's fundamental component of his discovery was the chesed of Hashem. Now, you know, it's a remarkable thing, isn't it interesting? Avram Avinu himself personifies chesed. So what's the idea? The idea is that Avram Avinu is imposing this, you know, his thing onto Hashem. I think I like chesed, Hashem is chesed. To a hammer, everything is a nail, right? No. The idea is, to a certain degree, it's not the presumptuous to a hammer, everything is a nail. But you know something? If a hammer has as its tool this kind of thing, if it's possible to use this thing as a nail, if there's an element of this thing which will be able to serve as a fastener like a nail, then it's going to figure it out and it's going to use it that way. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has many dimensions. Life has many dimensions. Avodas Hashem has many dimensions. Those seven prototypes that we attribute to the various others, or the 6 plus 1, right? They're different dimensions of recognition of service of Hashem. And you know what? You are going to see in Hashem according to your midos. You are going to perceive the kochos of Hashem according to who you are. That's the way it works. Avraham Avinu did discover the chesed of Hashem because of his midas hachesed. Now again, you could be dangerous, and you could say, oh, so you know what you're doing? You are imposing your preconceived notions or your feelings onto HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yeah, a person could do that. But a person could also not do that. A person could be able to sense and to realize what's there because they have a taste for it. And the truth is that this is explicit in the Gemara, in a negative sense. The Gemara says something which we have a English expression for as well. The Gemara says, kol ha-posel b'mumo posel. A person who disqualifies somebody. Now, that doesn't mean literally, you know, they disqualify them. technically, but that means a person who casts aspersions on somebody, who insults somebody, who speaks negatively of somebody, what they did is probably with something that they themselves carry that flaw. A person who casts aspersions, it's going to be in his own mum. What do we say in English to say that? Well, that's a word, but there's a great expression which is, it takes one to know one, right? You know that expression? It takes one to know one. We believe that it takes one to know one, right? And in fact, right, Chazal will say, the Gemara in Kiddushin says it, with regarding to a person goes and calls somebody by some kind of a problem in his yichus, in his ancestry, we say, one second, let's hold up a mirror to this guy, and let's see, maybe he has that same problem, maybe he has that same issue, and that's why he's so attuned to it, he's so sensitive to it. But you know that it works like that in life all the time. It works like that in life all the time. You know, sometimes you're going to have someone who, this is a very real example that you'll have, you'll know of someone who is wonderful, generous, fine, terrific. You know, he's really like, he's doing something, and he's doing it for, you know, just he wants to be good, he wants to be kind. And you're going to be talking about him to somebody who really, really isn't in the world of kindness. They're just not in the world of kindness for whatever reason, whatever their issues, their upbringing, their society, whatever it is, but they're just always, always hustling, you know, to get something or whatever it is. They don't know really what it means to be generous. And you're talking to them about this person who's so generous, and they're sitting there and they're thinking, oftentimes out loud, what's his angle? What's his angle? Why is he doing this for? He wants to win the Nobel Prize or something? Right, he wants, you know, he's really taking a cut, you know? What do you mean? I understand. He just wants to do it. He's just trying to help. But sometimes, you know, you could be so disconnected from something that you can't begin to understand it. You have to have something of an attunedness, probably not a word, but we can start it now, right? You have to be somewhat attuned to something in order to be able to recognize it. And when you have something which is not something that you have something of a sensitivity to, but it is your primary element, your primary dimension, so then when you're going to be looking at things, in general, you're going to be looking to identify that thing. And if it's there, you're going to find it. So Avraham Avinu was able to see the great kindness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which was a breakthrough discovery. Whereas Yitzchak, whose life was a life of self-control, right, he was able to perceive HaKadosh Baruch Hu's din, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu not stepping in and doing things personally with intervention, but rather delegating the world, relegating the world to something of a system, right, which is what din is, and so on and so forth. We perceive accurately in others, and we perceive accurately within HaKadosh Baruch Hu things which we have exercised and we have the power of ourselves. So when we come to the Mashiach and we see the Mashiach, Mashiach is Malchus. He's the kingdom. The king whose job it is to bring together all of the various people and components and strengths which exist within his realm, within his bailiwick, and he brings them together and harmonizes them. So he's got everything. And when you're going to look at him, when your name is Rabbi Shila, and your name Rabbi Shila expresses your essence, whatever that is, you'll see that in him. And when you'll see it in the Rav Chanina, when your name is Chanina and that's your essence, right, you're going to see that in him. When your name is Yanai and that's your essence, you're going to see that in him. Everyone saw it within himself. And you know, of course, Lahavdil, Elef Alfi Avdol, is to really distinguish. But the power that's going to exist when a person wants to run for office, right, to be that leader, or a person's going to be a king, is going to be popular, what's going to be the basis? Is going to be the level to which people are going to look at that person and see in that person their own feelings, their own aspirations. To the extent that that person's able to do that, that's the extent that they're going to be successful. So when people campaign, they want to cast the melech as, he has no idea what you guys are going through, right? You can't relate. So the guy, the next thing you see him, he's wearing a plaid flannel shirt, right? And he's flipping burgers in Bob's Diner. So now, I really relate to you guys, it's no problem, I understand you. right? And you'll have chveis. You know, Sarah Palin's going to get out of her speech, and she's going to be able to say, okay, well, first of all, I'm a woman. Second of all, I have a child with special needs. And third of all, chveis, you know, whatever the various things are, because as you identify with that person, you are bringing together all the components of your kingdom. I have a little bit of you in me. I have a little bit of you in me. And each one is going to see, oh, that president, that's the special needs president. What do you mean? To me, that's the women's rights president. To me, that's the chveis. I don't know, that's the energy, the development president. You know what? To the extent that you manage to be, you know, we say this often as a negative expression, all things to all people, you're going to be everybody's president. And when you're dealing with the Mashiach, and the Mashiach is supposed to be bringing everybody together, connecting to everybody, everybody saw that aspect of them in himself. So Rav Shila was not projecting, I am the Mashiach, right? His name is Shila. But he says, to me, I would see in him what is my Kayach. And he'll see in him his Kayach. And all of these things come together. You know, it says, Chazal say about Esther, that Esther was Naisei Schem Be'enei Kol Royeha. When Esther became the queen for Achashverosh, it says that she found favor in the eyes of all who beheld her. Everybody loved her. What does that mean, say Chazal? It says, Kol Echad V'Echad Nidmala Ki'umasa. Everyone looked at her. Achashverosh was not a king of a country. He was a king of an empire. Sheva ve'esrim u'meyam medina, 127 countries, states, were within his empire. So it was diverse, right? It wasn't like just the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. You know, this was many, 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 many more. Many more kingdoms were there. And it wasn't, you know, just 50 states, you know, with slight variations. This was an empire. The Persian Empire extended, right, the inhabited world, you know, covered much of the inhabited world, the Gemara says. He was Molech Bekipa. And she was supposed to be the queen of everybody? Well, you know something? Every place they looked at her and they said, she's from here. Right? Esther didn't tell anybody where she was from. So everybody claimed her as her own. And this one said, oh, she's definitely a chveis, you know, from our country. And that one said, from our country. That was the kayach. That's that strength. The ability for everybody to connect, to find a piece of that person, a piece of themselves within that melech or malka. That's the power that we speak about. That's what these chachamim are doing when they're projecting and they're saying, his name is Shila, his name is Chanina, his name is Yanai, or Yino. The Gemara, however, says two other names of Mashiach. One of them is Menachem ben Chizkiah, and the other one is Chivra the Beis Rebbe. Maral explains, what are these two names? These were not said by people specifically, you know, who carried that name. It wasn't somebody whose name was Menachem who said his name is Menachem. But Menachem means something, right? What's Menachem? Menachem is consolation. Right? Rashi famously says that consolation is transformation, right? A change of heart. Right? Vayinochem Hashem is a change of heart and a change of direction. Consolation is achieved when the person takes the big hole of grief which they have and they're somehow able to, they'll turn it around, to change it. Change from one attitude to the next. That's Menachem, where one thing comes to an end and another one begins. And therefore, of course, we can understand why Moshiach is going to be known by the name Menachem, as the Maral expresses it is, Kasher higia le'echad evel u'misa, when a person experiences grief or death, u'mekabel nechama, and then he accepts consolation, he's coming back to life. That's the pasuk which the Gemara brings. Menachem meshiv nafshi. Right? A Menachem, a consoler who brings my soul back to me. So we say that that's really what the Mashiach is doing. In a certain sense, it's like a recreation, like we've discussed before. It's a new world. That's Menachem. And Ben Chizkio, right, the son of Chizkio, that's pretty easy, right? Because that strength derives from above. The Rabbanon say, he's known as the Metzora of Beis Rebbe. And here the Maral basically says, in his, you know, just adapting it a little bit to Metzora, something which we learned about some time ago, probably we're going back a couple of months, right? There where we spoke, if you remember, about where would you find him? Where would you find him? And he says, oh, he was out, he'd be found outside of the walls of the city, sitting amongst the ones who are ill, bleeding, wounded. Remember, you know, that Tzalal was also an Agarata. So this expression in the Chazal reflects that. And the idea is, says the Maharal, he says, because a Metzaira is Michutz LaMachana. A Metzaira is outside of the camp. He's outside of the society as we know it. And when we spoke about it, right, it sounds very negative, wounded, and so on and so forth. But the idea was that the Moshiach is so different, is so of another world, that from where we sit right now, we would see him as being lost. You know, all that famous, those famous expressions you have in the Gemara, oh, when you get to the Olam Haba, those people who to here were very down low, over there are very up high. You know, people who are going to be outside of the mainstream, to some degree chased outside of the mainstream, because they don't make it, right, by the definitions of this world. Well, in Moshiach's case, that is indeed the case because of its complete, you know, belonging in some other world, in some other system. So that's the way he explains how this last term is used. That it's a strange, it's not really very, very much a part of this world. Rabbi Hartman brings something beautiful. I think it's his own, just gorgeous, very, very, very beautiful thing he says. It could be it's from the Maral. I can't read the note clearly that's from the Maral. It sounds to me like it's his own. But he says that the Maral says in a couple of places, you know, we say Ala Tadikim in our Brochen Shmonesrei, Ala Tadikim Val Chasidim Val Ziknei Amcha Beis Yisrael. Pletas Ephraim, right? What? On the tzaddikim, the righteous, the chassidim, the pious. Pletas Beis Ephraim, the remnants of their scribes. Right? And then what do we say? The Algeri Atzedek, and righteous converts. I mean, you know, tzaddikim, chassidim, you imagine, you know, like the top of the totem pole. A righteous convert is, you know, getting in on the ground floor, so to speak, you know? So very good, wonderful, right? But it's an interesting grouping that Chazal put them together, and he says that the idea is, the Maral's expression is that the idea is haseichel hu ger ba'olam hagashmi. He says a ger is a person who comes to a community to which he is, when he starts off as a stranger to that community, and yet he's attached to the community. So he says seichel, the mind, and the everything which the mind dictates is like a ger, is like a stranger in the physical world. It's like a stranger in the physical world. The person, the tzaddik, to a certain degree, in the chassid, we may, to some degree, to the extent that we integrate some value of it, we may give them prominence, but fundamentally, they are at odds. They're uncomfortable. They're not at home in many of the things which are very much the mainstream of what we do and what we practice. And in a sense, there's an aspect of Geirus that's going to be in there. And points out Rabbi Hartman, and you know what Chazal say? Say that the Geirim, converts for the Jewish people, are difficult, like a sapachas. What's a sapachas? Sapachas is a term which is used for a drop of leprosy. Right? So what does it mean? So most pshatim in the Gemara, most of the rishonim in the Gemara say that it's because they are somehow so much more sensitive and spiritual, right? That when they join onto the Jewish people, what happens is they make the rest of us look bad. You know, sort of like Bali Tshuva. You know, like, you can't talk in davening yet. You haven't been from long enough. You know, it's like, you know, people come in with conscientiousness and care and sensitivity to the matters of the spirit, beyond sometimes that which we have, and we just get used to it and we get entrenched in this world. And the expression we use for it is like the sapachas, like tzoras. Moshiach, the Gemara says, we refer to as tzoras, because it's bringing in such a strong connection to a whole different world of values that to us sometimes is outside of the fence of the city. It's like, well, what are you talking about? You know, it's from the outside. So we find it difficult. we find it difficult because it demands of us something else. It's different. That's the idea, he says. That's what we refer to him as Chivra de Beis Rebbe. Okay. Understand? Hear what he's saying? Okay. So, it's an idea. Okay. That was Perek Memala. Pretty good? Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Okay. Perek Memdeis. So now we go on to the next piece which he wants to talk about here. Okay. Mashiach. Remember, this is the Netzach Yisrael, so we're supposed to be learning about Geula, right? We've moved to, from a lot from the talking about the Golus, which was the first chelik of the Netzach Yisrael, focused much more on the Golus. Here he speaks more, much more about the Geula and the Mashiach. So he says, Mashiach comes at the end of days, and thus, in a certain sense, to continue the theme of the person being focused on matters of which are more sublime and spiritual, he says, you know, it's sort of like life itself. It's sort of like life itself. The Maral explains in many places the fact that the Torah says this din of Mipnei Seva Tokom V'Yadarta Pnei Zaken. You're supposed to get up for elders. You're supposed to afford special respect, accord special respect to those who are older than you. Not only that, but Chazal even, not Chazal, the Pasuk uses the term for a wise person is a Zaken, right? Now, the person's not necessarily even old. In yesterday's parsha, right? Parsha Shmos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe Rabbeinu, "Lech v'yasafta es ziknei Yisrael." Go and gather together the elders of the Jewish people, right? So Rashi says, "Ziknei Yisrael" doesn't literally mean the old people of the Jewish people, because if you're going to try to do that, right, it's going to take you forever. I mean, how are you going to find the elders? How are you going to assemble the elders of the nation of 600,000 adult males, right? I mean, it'll be hundreds of thousands of people, right? So rather, Ziknei means the miuchadim liyeshiva, the wise ones. And the term which we use for them are older people. Why? What's the idea? And Chazal say that Shlomo HaMelech wrote the book of Koheles. He wrote the book of Shir HaShirim when he was young, right? And romantic, quote unquote. He wrote the book of Mishlei when he was middle-aged and wise. And he wrote the book of Koheles when he was old. Right? He looked back on this world, and he saw what counted and what didn't count. Age is supposed to give a person perspective. Now, of course, there's a reason why not every elder is one of the elders, because sometimes age gives a person more time to play golf. A person can just use their older age to do things that were the same interests that they had when they were young, but somehow now, you know, they're, you know, based on their 201k and their their social security, they're able to have time to do it. But fundamentally, we speak about zikna as where the person, you know, because somehow the body is not as vibrant as it was, now the person, it's not just that they're not interested in that because they don't have the kale and the tools for that, but now they're able to somehow see past that and see what's really valuable. Age gives a person valuable perspective as to what's important, as to what's lasting, as to what is going to be significant. Says the Maral, so the end of days with a little d is like the end of days with a big D. In other words, Mashiach, which comes at the end, is that time of clarification. It's that time of perspective. You know, the leper of the young people may be the, you know, the colleague of the elders. You know, a young person who's not interested in, you know, running around and, you know, cars and parties and everything else, but he's interested in, you know, pursuing things of meaning and learning, he may find better company amongst, you know, people who are old and have been there and done that and understand what its eternal value is. So therefore, you know, the koiches hagashmi, the power of physicality, tends to wane with age. And Maral offers this idea that to some degree that's going to be the dynamic as well in the end of days with the Mashiach. It reflects what we have ourselves.
That the Mashiach will entertain himself with Zakenim, or that the youth at that time will entertain
the it's not literally they're going to be old people with the Mashiach. Not literally. But he's saying just as we individually in our lives, as physicality wanes, we are offered a window into clearer perspective on what is most valuable. As the earth gets old, as time marches on towards Mashiach, that process also happens. Mashiach is old age of the world. And there, the physical wanes and the spiritual grows. You know, it's a little, it's an interesting idea, a very interesting comparison. If you would look around and you would say, okay, well, presumably we're getting closer to Mashiach, but is the world getting more or less hedonistic? You know, I don't know. You know, we're getting pretty good at upping the ante physically. So I don't know, you know, empirically, to make it shy. But this is the idea. When Mashiach comes. But you know, from 70 to 75, it's not like shoo. You know, it's a gradual thing, right? It's a gradual thing. Starts at around my age. downhill. So that's the story. So that's element number one, which he speaks about in terms of what's happening at the time of Mashiach. And then he says another element, which is going to be really the focus here for the balance of this parak, which is that we associate Mashiach with Vayemahu Yiyah Hashem Echad. On that day Hashem will be one, His name will be one, everybody in the world will come together to rule Hashem as one. Says Shleimus, wholeness, is together with unity or oneness or singularity. When things come together, when things are diverse and separate and all over the place, it has its value, it has its strength. But ultimately, to achieve its greatest unity is to achieve its completion. Maral quotes for this a pasuk, the pasuk which we have by the building of the Mishkan, where they constructed the curtains, and it says they sewed it together and then they hooked it together, and the pasuk says Vayhi HaMishkan Echad, and the Mishkan was one. And the idea was the Mishkan at that point was together, was complete, it was one. I want to just share with you, before I go to Maral, I want to just share with you a beautiful, beautiful thing that I saw yesterday. And in fact, I was hoping to share this yesterday morning, and my drasha just, I looked at the clock, and I said, there's no way I can say this without going to Shalosh Shudas. Okay, so it held it off, but it's a beautiful, and it's mamish connected to this thing. And we were talking about the war, and the values of soldiers in Eretz Yisrael, the very beautiful values of soldiers, which are growing amongst the very, very idealistic growing ranks in the soldiers of Eretz Yisrael. And there's a beautiful Gemara in Maseches Shabbos. The Gemara says, brings a machlokes tanoim in the Mishnah, the machlokes tanoim in the Mishnah, about a person who wears his weapon on Shabbos. Is that considered carrying or not? Why wouldn't it be considered carrying? If a person wears a necklace, right? A woman wears a necklace. Is that carrying? No. What happens if she has a little pill container that she carries around her neck in a string? Is that carrying? Absolutely, 100%. If it's a product that they sell, a pill container that's carried around the neck, she'll be chayev. It's not even a shinui. Right? You wear your backpack. I'm wearing it. I'm not carrying it. Of course you're carrying it. People carry by holding things in their hands. People carry by carrying things on their backs. People carry by carrying things around their neck. The determining factor that determines carrying is not what limb you use. Unless, of course, you're doing it in an unusual way, which any malacha you do in an unusual way is not really chayev. Right? Shouldn't be done, but it's not chayev. What determines whether it's carrying or not is whether it's something that adorns you, or whether it's something utilitarian. So that's why, we have all kinds of interesting shilas about wristwatches, right? Is the wristwatch jewelry? Or is the wristwatch, I need to tell the time, and the convenient way for me to carry it is for me to carry it on my wrist. Right? So all kinds of interesting discussions in halacha about that, right? And some would say, okay, well, look, I'll prove it to you. Would you wear that watch if it was broken? So if it's a diamond-studded gold watch, you might wear it even if it's broken, then it's jewelry. But if it's You know, if it's your black plastic Casio or you know Timex, you know you're not going to wear it if it's broken. It's not an adornment. No, those are shaila. So listen to this shaila. Wearing your gun or wearing your sword, is that an adornment or is that utilitarian?
Do you have a uniform on?
Hmm?
Do you have a uniform on? In other words, does it look like it's part of the deal?
Let's say.
Marine dress.
Let's say. I'll never forget. I don't think I'll ever forget. I can't say because I didn't have ever yet. But I don't think I'll ever forget when I was in Eretz Yisrael once during the very difficult days of the Intifada, and I was at a chasana. I was at a wedding, and it was a night wedding. And it was outside. It was pretty, you know, it was fairly dark in the shadows. I'm standing on the side, and there was a young woman standing in front of me. And you know, wearing a ball gown. You know, a dark ball gown, and she's standing in front of me, and I once in a while she's like going like this, and shifting and so on and so forth. And after a few minutes, my eyes adjusted to the darkness, and this girl wearing a ball gown had an M16 slung over her back. You know, it was a day. I mean, now it's less, but in those days when that was happening, a lot of people were walking around with their guns, which they normally wouldn't take. You know, under normal circumstances in Israel, they wouldn't, you know, regular civilians wouldn't. This girl was wearing a ball gown at a wedding with an M16 slung over her back. You know, it's an interesting tachshit, interesting adornment, right? But the Mishnah has a discussion.
Was it
gold
studded? Was it gold?
No. Like what they call dull lead looking, whatever it is. So the Mishnah has a discussion. Right? Is it an adornment for a person to be, you know, to be armed or not? So one opinion says yes, it is, and the other one says no, it's not. You know, it says the Mefurish Pasuk in the United Nations, v'chitisu charvaisam le'itim. Right? They will beat their swords into plowshares, right, and their spears into pruning things, whatever it is, right. And then one nation will not lift up a sword against another. So if ultimately we're trying to get rid of this stuff, how can you call it an adornment? So the other one says, well, meanwhile, it's still going to be considered, it's still an adornment. Says, if it's an adornment, why are they getting rid of it then, lost in love? If it's a decoration, then don't get rid of it. Right? It's useful even if you're not waging the battle. It says, no, because then it has no meaning. When there's no battle, it has no meaning. So therefore, at that point, it's not an adornment. So Rav Kook has a beautiful, beautiful Rav Kook. There are a few svarim which are published an Agarita by Rav Kook. They're called Ein Ayo. Ayin Yud Nun Aleph Yud Hey. Ein Ayo. Ayo is the name of a creature, but it's also the Rosh HaTevis, the initials of Avram Yitzchak HaKohen. So they published his notes on Brachas and Shabbos so far, as far as I know. Very slow going. I don't know if they have much more fantastic stuff. Fantastic, fantastic things. So he explains this Gemara, and he says, why would a weapon be an adornment? So he says, because when a person uses a weapon to stand up to defend something that they believe in. We're not talking here about a weapon being used, you know, by some kind of a ridiculous, you know, gang member going trying to steal. We're talking about weapons which are used by nations to stand up for their identity, for what they believe in. And he says strength of belief, of conviction, is an adornment for a person. When a person believes in something, right, of course, he says, we're talking about a strength which is reflective of a tara, of a purity and a goodness. But when the purity, when there's arms with, you know, in Israeli army, they have an expression called toar aneshek. It's the moral code of the army, purity of arms, right, how they have to be used. But the idea is, it's the tool to be able to support your conviction, what you believe in. So, of course, that's an adornment. That's an adornment. Now, it says, nations carry arms. They lift up swords one against the other. And he says, you know, the greatest strength of arms, in a certain sense, is, he was ahead of the Cold War, right? Where he says it's in their deterrent capacity. The idea is, when I bear arms, I'm saying, this is what I am. I'm a nation with my culture, with my values, with my principles, what I stand for. Don't try to erase me. I'm not doing it because I'm going to erase you, necessarily, right? the world is a world of dynamic, separate qualities and strengths. Hashem divided the world into 70 nations, and there's this going to be this balance of power which exists. And the beauty, the strength of the sword, is not in the blood that it spills, but in the fact that it says, I am what I am, respect what I am. Don't try to overstep the lines, right? Mutual deterrence, right? The power of America and Russia having their nuclear weapons was that neither of them would fire them. Neither of them would try to take over the other. Each one would let the other one be. That's the power. So he says, the power of mutual deterrence is there in our world. And in our world, therefore, it's an adornment of your strength, of your conviction, of what you stand for. But he says, when Moshiach comes, then what happens is, the world becomes one. In a world that becomes one, so then it's not the same dynamic of each one saying, I'm going to maintain my individual integrity. But somehow we take the little bit of everybody and we meld it together and we put it together into one harmonious whole. The notion of the weapon as a deterrent, don't touch me, I'm not going to touch you, becomes irrelevant in a world where harmony takes the place of balance, of separates. That's the world of Echad. That's why in that world it won't be an adornment. In that world the weapon says, I'm staying outside of the harmony. I'm maintaining my own distinctiveness away from the harmony. No, that olam is the world of complete harmony, of coming together. Put down the weapons and we're still not going to overcome each other. We're going to harmonize together with each other. That's the world of Shlemus. Well, it's a magnificent touch of the Gemara to me. Magnificent. Very typical of Rav Kook, who was very focused on harmony and Shlemus as the ultimate. But the Maral speaks about this idea as well, that Moshiach is this time of Echad, which is the time of Shalem, when the time things are whole, together. When things aren't whole, you have parts, you have separates, you have separate nations, you have separate pieces. When it's together as one, it's one integrated whole. That's the way it is. And that's why we find constantly with Klal Yisrael, right? Yaakov Avinu came down to Mitzrayim with 70 nefesh, right? We've spoken about this before, with 70 soul. Esav went with 6, right? Nefashos, souls, right? Because with Yaakov Avinu, who is very, very much an anticipator of that perfect future, everything is supposed to come together as one. Esav represents the opposite. Esav is that which stands in the way. Amalek, Ein Hakise Shalem, Ein Hashem Shalem, Ad Sheyachuz Ha'aretz Shel Amalek. Esav is the grandfather of Amalek. The name isn't whole, isn't one until Amalek is gone. Amalek is by separation. Here, our world is the world of harmony. So the Maral explains as follows. Right? The famous Gemara. The Gemara in Pesachim. It explains a verse we've discussed before. The verse says, we say it at the conclusion of every tefillah, V'hoi Hashem l'melech ha'kol oretz, Hashem will be king over the whole earth, b'yom ahu on that day, yeh Hashem echad u'shmo echad. Hashem will be one, and His name will be one. So what does that mean, Hashem will be one on that day, Hashem will be one, and His name will be one? So the Gemara says, Hashem's not one now. Now Hashem is not one, Hashem is many at this point. So the Gemara says, our world is not like with the world to come. In our world, when a bad thing happens, we make one kind of a bracha. Blessed are you, Hashem, the judge of truth. When a good thing happens, we make another kind of bracha. Blessed are you, Hashem, Atev HaMeitiv. But in the world to come, on everything, we're going to see everything evenly. On everything, we'll be able to say, Atev HaMeitiv. Hashem is good, and He does good. And we say, and His name will be one. What does it mean? Now His name isn't one? So the Gemara, right, now His name isn't one. If you look in the Siddur, what do you see? You look in the Chumash, you see the name spelled one way, right? Yud Kei Vav Kei. How do we pronounce it? We pronounce it with the name of Adnos, right? We pronounce it differently, right? Ado, right? That's what we say, even though that's not the way it's spelled. Hashem's name is divided. On that day, we're going to pronounce it exactly the way it is written. So what does this mean? What does this mean? How do we understand this? How do we understand this this change? So I want to explain this following the lines of the Maral completely. The Maral brings another Mamar Chazal, which is interesting. not so well known a Sifrei, which says Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Hashem Elokeinu in this world, Hashem Echad in the world to come. Hashem is Elokeinu in this world, Hashem Echad in the world to come. Now sometimes, right, we understand things like that, and we say what the idea is behind that, the idea that's being expressed there is, in this world Hashem is only Elokeinu of the Jews, but in the world to come Hashem will be Echad for Kol HaOlam Kulei. That seems to be the way Rashi explained it. Hashem is now Elokeinu, ultimately He'll be Echad, He'll be for everybody. But the Maharal understands it differently. And he says, you know, part of what Chazal are doing is saying that it's two stages, is because we don't say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Echad. Right? Save a word. No, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. There are two different stages here. A stage of Olam Hazeh, a stage of Olam Haba. Let me try to explain it to you as follows. Elokim, first, excuse me. Hashem is who He is. And at the same time, there's Hashem, the way we relate to Hashem. Right? This is something we've talked about many times in the Maharal. It's a very fundamental principle in Machshava, in thought, which is that Hashem is unchanging, but our relationship to Him is very, very much constantly changing. The relationship of the world to Hashem is constantly changing. Right? When Hashem is revealed in the world, it's not that Hashem is bigger or smaller, so to speak. Hashem is Hashem. Hashem has that constancy, but the extent that the world has Hashem is what's in flux, is what changes. Perception is completely different. And the Maharal says beautifully, beautifully, that that's the difference between Ksiva and Kriya. Ksiva is Hashem's name as it is there on the piece of paper. Kriya is the way I read it. Right? In Ksiva, it's an unchanging essence. It's always written the same way. But how I will be able to read it is what changes. The bracha that I say based on an event is the way I perceive it, the way I experience it. It's not HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem is where He is, what He is. But the way I perceive it, the way I connect to it, is what's in flux and what changes. And in this world, the way it is, we experience Hashem as Elokeinu. We experience Hashem with variance, with division. Because in a fundamental sense, we are removed from Him. And the idea is, we stand like a person, right? The name Elohim is the name of judgment. We stand like the person being judged, where we see HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives to one and takes away from another, right? And therefore, the perceptions are different. We don't see the harmony in everything. We struggle, we try to say it besimcha, we try to say it with joy, even when it's a difficult time. But fundamentally, we see it as a difficulty. We stand before Hashem as an eved, as a servant stands before the master. Okay, so excuse me, I don't think I'm presenting this in the most organized way I've ever presented something. But let me just try I'm trying to give you the various pieces which the Maharal says on this Gemara, the pieces which are highlights, which are very, very clear, very, very clear, in order to be able to construct this picture. Okay, piece number one that I told you is that there's Hashem in His essence, and there's Hashem the way we relate to Him. And Maharal identifies that with the difference between the way the name is written, which is, that's there, that's Hashem, and the way we read it. The way we read it. Connected to, like we say with this thing, the way we perceive it. Hashem does what He does, it's always the same, but now we perceive it differently. But what's the difference between the way Hashem is written and the way we read it? We read Hashem as Adon, right? As a master. And says the Maharal, second principle. That there are two ways we can relate to Hashem. As we know, Avinu Malkeinu, our Father, our King. We relate to Him as children. Im Kivonim, we relate to Him as Avadim, as servants. It says the Maharal, conceptually, that's always going to be the case. Because after all, we are the Olul to Hashem's Olah. We are the effect to Hashem's cause. Hashem created, and we are the product. We are what He made. So as such, we can be two. There are two methods of connection and relationship that way. One method of connection is a son looks like his father. A son has the same genetics as the father. Connection. On the other hand, as the result of the father, there's the master, there's the idea that I owe my entire being to you. I am therefore beneath you. I have a responsibility towards you of deference, of indebtedness. That's mastery. And at a time where there is a sense of the separation between God and mankind, what prevails is adnos. He's up there, we're down here. But there's also a time, the time that we know is the time of Mashiach, where Hashem is Melech al kol ha'aretz, where what prevails is not the sense of mastery, but what prevails is the sense of connection, of father-son, of similarity, of being part of the same thing. Sometimes one feeling is dominant, and sometimes the other feeling is dominant. Both are there. But the truth is, according to our perception, according to the level to which we are connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's the extent to which we are, in that sense, relating and connecting. So when we think about a world where we are physical beings, where our orientation and our primary motivation, and that which we think about and are involved with, is the preoccupations of, to borrow what we discussed before, of youth. So there, how connected are we to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as peas from a pod, two peas from a pod? You know, in the end of Parshas Bereishis, it describes the deterioration of the world in very interesting terms, terms which are taken as being describing some kind of mystical events, very hard to understand. It says, "Vayavayu b'nei ha'Elohim el b'nois ha'adam." The children of Elohim, sounds like the children of God, came onto, intimately, the daughters of man. Right? So there are midrashim about angels that came down and had sexual relations with women and came out with all this freakish stuff. The world was so inside down and upside, inside out and upside down. If you look at the Ramban there, the Ramban says, no, not necessarily. Okay, and I will grant you that what I'm doing is paraphrasing the Ramban. The Ramban doesn't necessarily write this explicitly, but you read between the lines of the Ramban, this is what the Ramban seems to be alluding to. What are we? Are we children of God or are we children of man, children of earth? We're both, right? Hashem made us as physical beings, a body cultured from the earth, formed from the earth, and he blew into us a soul from him. And the question of life always is, which one is dominant? And what happened was, when God saw the deterioration, what he saw was, he saw the children of God, those who were infused with the divine soul, which were connected to Hashem in his image, that they went after and followed after their basic physical human components. The children of God were lured after the daughters of man. That's the description. And when we are in this world, in the heady days of youth, again, to use that categorization, and we see ourselves intoxicated and involved in physicality, how connected are we? We're not so connected. We are dependent. We are completely in the hands of Hashem. But the way we're going to refer to Hashem is as our master. We're not going to refer to him by his direct name. We're not on quote-unquote a first-name basis with him, because we're so distant from him. And because we are so rooted in the physical world, and in the physical world there are good things and bad things, positive things and negative things experienced as physical things in the world, we have that division. But as we mature, as the world matures, and we become more b'nei Elohim, children of God, we become more defined by the spiritual age, rids us of some of the negative preoccupations, and we mature past that, and we connect to Hashem in a meaningful spiritual way, we become more connected to Hashem as connection, so to speak, the first name basis, connecting to Hashem's essence, than we do from a distance. And the differences of physical state are not nearly the same kind of a barrier to experience Hashem differently, because the physical is background. And what's foreground, what's central, is the connection to Hashem. And we're therefore able to weather those storms and see Hashem equally in all these times. And that's a time of Echad, when we become more connected, less like separate parties ruled over by Hashem, but more connected to Hashem. That's the period of completion. And that's where the true unity of Hashem becomes seen and experienced and appreciated by us as well. That's the idea. In this world, it's Hashem Elokeinu. And Elokim, by the way, is always, right? Elokim is Lashon Rabim. It's in the plural. But in the world to come, it's Hashem Echad. It's where we embrace that harmony completely, where we understand Hashem's role becomes dominant, and we connect Him to that, in that way, in order to be able to bring that all together. That's the essence of what the Maharal teaches here in this second part, in Perek Mem Beis. Now, he has a fascinating explanation of another Agadata in Chulin, but we're going to leave it for today. We're not going to do it next time either. It's an expression. He makes sense of a very strange sounding Agadata using this principle of Echad. But we're gonna leave it for today. Okay.
You know, Rabbi Shapiro's day, there was some question about whether it is proper to wear a military uniform in shul. Is there still questions?